Kelly Emmons was sitting in the armchair, her head bent over the computer in her lap, her fingers pecking away. Gusting out a sigh of relief, April stepped into the living room and shut the door. Emmons looked up and smiled. "Hi. I'm back on your case, but don't let anybody know about it." Boulder, Colorado. Len Kinski sat tensely in the rickety little grillwork chair on the sidewalk outside the Walnut Brewery restaurant. A cool breeze was blowing down off the mountains. The trees lining the street had already started to turn golden. Looking in through the restaurant's big front window, Kinski could see the big, gleaming stainless steel vats of the microbrewery. People were ordering samplers, a row of shot glasses filled with different types of beer. He longed for the old Luchau's in New York, and an honest mug of strong German beer. Across the table from him sat Rick Chatham, a bland smile on his round, bearded face. Kinski didn't trust men who wore ponytails, but he was desperate enough to agree to this meeting with the environmental activist. "Try the wheat beer," Chatham suggested. "You'll like it." Kinski did not appreciate being told what he would or wouldn't like. But what the hell, he thought, the guy's just trying to be friendly. Besides, I need him more than he needs me. Although the pedestrian mall was a block away, Walnut Street was crowded with scruffy-looking students in tattered jeans and t-shirts that were supposed to look impoverished, but actually cost a fortune. There were tourists meandering by as well, toting backpacks, bottled water, and babies that either slept or squalled as they meandered along the sidewalk. Up the street, Kinski could see some mountains and clear blue sky, but he preferred to look at the brick and clabbered buildings lining the street. "They're trying to make this one-horse burg look like a real city," he thought, "but it's just a university town, nothing more." "So you've quit Astro?" Chatham made it a statement, not a question. "Yeah," Kinski said with some bitterness. "I'm going to leave the country and see the world." A waitress asked what they wanted. Kinski asked for the wheat beer. Chatham went through a long menu of bottled water and finally selected the local offering. "What made you decide to quit?" Chatham asked. He tried to pose it as a friendly question, but Kinski knew he was really sizing him up. "Always tell the sucker what he wants to hear," Kinski knew. That was the secret of successful fortune tellers, and business consultants, and public relations experts. "I couldn't take it anymore," he said slowly, as if pulling it from some inner reservoir of conscience. "I mean, they're going to be beaming gigawatts worth of microwaves through the atmosphere, and they expected me to tell the world it's all right. Better than all right. They want to pretend it's an environmentally clean source of energy." Chatham's light brown eyes sparkled. "Let me play devil's advocate for a minute," he said, hunching forward in his chair and clasping his hands together on the little round grillwork table. "Okay," said Kinski. "Go ahead." "The microwaves will be beamed to a remote location in New Mexico. White Sands, the middle of nowhere. Astro Corporation is building an antenna farm there to receive the energy being beamed down from space. The Rectenna farm, yeah. It's already finished. Just waiting for the satellite to start working." "That's federal land, isn't it?" "White Sands Proving Grounds, right. Dan's leased the land for the Rectenna farm. Looks like a big set of steel clothes poles stuck in the sand. Thousands of them." "Dan?" "Dan Randolph, the head of the corporation. Founder and CEO. And chairman of the board, too." Chatham pursed his lips. "He's got all the power in his own hands, doesn't he?"
"He sure does."
"So," Chatham went on, "if these microwaves are being beamed to such a remote location where nobody's living, not even cattle or grass, who's going to get hurt?" Kinski smiled crookedly at him.
"Devil's advocate, huh? Okay, yeah, maybe nothing'll get fried except some lizards and snakes."
"So what's the harm?" Kinski hesitated a moment. He wants me to do his thinking for him, he realized. He wants me to come up with the ideas he can use. Raising an index finger, Kinski said,
"First, if they do kill some wildlife out there in the desert, who's going to know about it? They sure as hell won't tell anybody."
"Ah, good point. Second," Kinski raised another finger,
"if they make everybody believe that the satellite works and they're getting gigawatts of energy from it, They're going to start building more power sets with more Rectenna farms on the ground. Chatham nodded hard enough to make his ponytail bob up and down. And where will they put those Rectenna farms? As close to big cities as they can, because those cities will be the market for the energy. Right, Kinski said. Growing more excited, Chatham asked, and what about the long-term effects on the climate of beaming so much energy through the atmosphere? Has anybody looked into that? Dan got a couple of meteorologists from some university to come up with a paper that said the effect would be negligible. Negligible? That's the term they use when they want you to look the other way. There's more, too.
What?
Those rockets they use, Kinski said. Solid fuel boosters. Their exhaust gases are toxic, for Christ's sake. Aluminum perchloride or something. We can't park our cars within a mile of the launch pad because the exhaust peels the paint off. Wow, this is dynamite. We've got to get this information out on the net. I've got to organize protests, rallies, the whole nine yards. Kinski felt a pang of guilt at having betrayed Dan. What the hell, he told himself. This geek would come after Dan anyway, with me or without me. I've got to look out for numero uno. Which reminded him, you mentioned the consultant's fee when we talked on the phone. Chatham immediately sobered. That's right. I have a cashier's check for $1,000 right here in my pocket. All I have to do is fill in your name as the recipient. We talked about a lot more than $1,000. This is just the first installment, my friend. There'll be more, plenty more. I think you're going to be very valuable to us, helping to orchestrate the protests that'll bring this satellite project to a screeching halt. I'm heading out of the country, Kinski said. May I ask why? Thinking of his ex-wife and her lawyer, and even more of Roberto and the shadowy figures he must be working for, Kinski replied merely, personal reasons. But you can stay in touch through email, can't you? Can you set up an account for me? With a new username? I don't want to be traced. Sure, Chatham said easily. No problem. And you can wire transfer my money. Sure, he repeated. Anywhere you want. Al-Bashir was tempted to reveal his scheme to Garrison. The crusty old scoundrel would appreciate the beauty of it, and he might even agree to killing the President of the United States. Garrison had complained about that jerk-off in the White House often enough. But he resisted the temptation. Garrison was an American, and even though he had always run the multinational tricontinental oil corporation with the totally unsentimental attitude of a man who puts profits above all else, some shred of national loyalty might still make him balk at the scheme Al-Bashir was unfolding. So I must be clever enough to do what needs to be done without stirring up his opposition. He's still smarting from the realization that I'm the real power in the corporation, and he's working hard to win key members of the board away from me. My best path is to make him a party to the scheme without revealing the entire scheme to him. I want him either on my side or neutralized, not actively opposing me. The old man hardly ever left the tower in downtown Houston that housed Tricontinental's corporate offices. Garrison kept an apartment on the floor below his own penthouse offices, a spacious suite comfortably furnished with all the latest gadgetry and a handful of servants. Al-Bashir felt quite pleased that Garrison had invited him to his living quarters for a quiet little dinner, rather than to his office for a more impersonal meeting. This is a sign that he's beginning to accept the situation, Al-Bashir told himself, at least a little. He wants to show off his lifestyle to me. All to the good. The apartment was even more sumptuous than Al-Bashir had expected. A young, broad-shouldered butler in a traditional dark suit was waiting for him when the doors to the private elevator smoothly slid open. Al-Bashir found himself in a Texas-sized living room, thickly carpeted, the two farthest walls completely glassed so that he could see the garish majesty of Houston's skyscraper towers just beginning to light up in the twilight glow that still lingered on the distant horizon. These furnishings and decorations are tasteful, even elegant, Al-Bashir thought as the butler led him to the bar of black marble. Despite the room's size, it seemed comfortable, livable, and not like some of the homes al-Bashir had seen.